Thank you for joining us this afternoon. My name is Jenny Pagel-Guile. I am the Executive Director of the National Pancreas Foundation, and I'm glad you can join us today. Part of our mission is to move forward research and advocation for our patients and our community and supporting our medical professionals. And today we're doing part of that work, and so glad that you're able to be here with us for this discussion. A few things about the National Pancreas Foundation. We've awarded over $5 million in grants over the years, and we endorse over 180 centers of excellence across the country committed to pancreatic disease care. And we provide a variety of services and programs for patients and their care providers. If you have community members that are interested in volunteering and being more active, we do have 30 chapters across the country, and we're always open to more. There's a variety of opportunities to participate in advocacy, fundraising, community health fairs, and other areas. So please reach out to the MPF staff to receive more information. Also, we have a variety of fundraising events across the country. We're gearing up for our fall gala season. If you or know someone that is in one of these areas, we would love to have you volunteer or attend. Our Courage for a Cure galas help fund programs such as this. In addition, we have honorees from our patients, doctors, and care providers. So please look to our website for more information for times and locations. Also, we have a limited number of spots available for the Marine Corps Marathon. The deadline is this weekend. So if you have anyone that is interested in running and running for a cure, there is a $1,500 fundraising minimum, but we would love to have more representation at this marathon and create awareness and raise funds for the National Pancreas Foundation. So reach out to Cheyenne or share this with another coworker or friend if you know somebody that is a runner. Also, don't forget our 20th anniversary fellow symposium is taking place in March of 2026. Registrations are open. There are limited numbers of spots available for our fellows. Last year, we had our highest number of applications, so make sure that you fill those out and share those with people. We look forward to this event, and it's a testament to the work of the National Pancreas Foundation and the value of our fellow symposium through our mentors and our fellows in the field. We look forward to seeing you in Phoenix. Also, if you are at a center of excellence or an institution that is interested in doing your own DIY fundraising, there are several platforms available that you can partner with the MPF. If you want to go to our website or, again, reach out to our staff, we're more than happy to help you set up a website to create fundraising. If you want to do a community walk, a local fundraiser, we would love to help you support the MPF so we continue to do programs such as this. Also, this webinar, as well as many others, are available on our medical professional portal. This portal and this program are sponsored by AbbVie. There are webinars, as well as free CME opportunities. So again, open to all medical professionals, not just our centers of excellence. And there's also a resource of grant opportunities, lists of clinical trials, and other information available that is useful to our centers of excellence. So please check out that, share it with those that you are interested in, and it's a great resource and educational opportunity for our community. And as always, if to stay up to date, you can subscribe to our monthly newsletter, and we have all the social channels available. We would love to have you follow us. And again, continue to work with us and share with your community so everyone is aware of what's going on locally and nationally. If you're currently following us on social media, you'll see that we're in the middle of our Color It Purple campaign, our community-wide DIY fundraiser. Our next webinar is taking place October 8th, so make sure that you register today. We would love to see you. And again, all of these are posted on our online post event, but for the discussion and opportunities to really engage, we encourage you to participate in real time. And today our topic is understanding chronic pancreatitis, pain, and the role of exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. And I have the great honor of introducing our speakers today. First, we have Dr. Thomas Gonda, is the director of the Pancreas Disease Program and co-director of the Pancreatic Cancer Center. His clinical practice is focused on therapeutic endoscopy with a primary interest in treatment and prevention of pancreatic biliary disease, and a specific focus on therapeutic EUS for the diagnosis, palliation, and treatment of pancreatic disease. He is lead investigator, an initiator, and collaborator of clinical trials in the treatment of pancreatic cancer, pancreatitis prevention, and treatment of pancreatic and other gastrointestinal precursors in novel endoscopic technologies or therapies. His translational research lab is focused on biomarkers for pancreatitis-associated pain and early detection of cancer. Joining Dr. Gonda is Dr. Tanya Palermo, and she is a clinical psychologist and professor and vice chair for research in the Department of Anesthesiology and Pain Medicine at University of Washington School of Medicine. She holds the Hughes M. and Catherine Blake Endowed Professorship in Health Psychology and serves as a director of the Center for Child Health, Behavior, and Development at Seattle Children's Research Institute. Dr. Palermo leads an NIH-funded research program on physiocycle treatment of chronic pain, and she is also the editor-in-chief for the Journal of Pain. Thank you so much to our speakers, and also I would like to thank AbbVie as our corporate partner for these events. And now I will turn it over to our speakers.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here today. I'm going to start with a question for Dr. Gonda to start us off with some overview of chronic pancreatitis and EPI. Can you tell us a little bit about what is EPI and the signs and symptoms?
Thanks, Dr. Palermo, and good afternoon also, everyone. Thank you for the National Pancreas Foundation for putting together this this program and the opportunity to talk about these diseases and conditions. So the focus here is on really the connection between chronic pancreatitis and exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. So just to define the first entity, exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, this is really the terminology that sort of covers the absence or the disease when pancreatic function diminishes and the ability of the pancreas to contribute to do its sort of digestive functions goes away. As many of you know, the pancreas is a really interesting, diverse kind of two-in-one type of organ. It is both an endocrine organ and an exocrine organ. The endocrine organ means that it has cells in it that produce hormones, the most important of which is insulin, that of course regulates glucose. But most of us think of it as primarily, and it may just be sort of 50-50, but primarily as an exocrine organ, which is it contributes to digestion, produces digestive enzymes that get secreted from the pancreas at the time of food consumption and are essential in digesting essentially all of the nutrient components, whether it's fat, protein, or carbohydrates. The pancreatic enzymes are necessary and entirely necessary for the digestive function of the pancreas. So when this digestive function diminishes and the ability of the pancreas to produce these digestive enzymes diminish to a significant degree, and that may be as much as diminishing close to 80-90% of the original capacity of the pancreas, then patients develop a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency.
Great, thank you. And now can you tell us a little bit about what is CP and its signs and symptoms?
So chronic pancreatitis is kind of a parallel but not entirely overlapping condition. It really is more of the morphological change that occurs in the pancreas or develops in the pancreas as a result of ongoing repeated or chronic inflammation. Chronic pancreatitis is a fibrosing sort of scarring condition that leads to a significant decrease in the sort of cells that make up the both functions, both the endocrine and the exocrine functions of the pancreas. So if we think about it just sort of back to basic sort of physiology, the majority of a normal pancreas is taken up by cells called acinar cells, and these cells are responsible for producing the pancreatic enzymes that get secreted or released into the duct structures in the pancreas and then released into the intestines. In chronic pancreatitis, which is again a consequence typically of multiple bouts of inflammation or scarring, these acinar cells are eventually replaced predominantly by either inflammatory cells or fibrosis or connective tissue or scar tissue. And essentially, this transformation of the of the pancreatic tissue is what chronic pancreatitis is and what can lead to pancreatic insufficiency. I think it's important to stress here that although the two terms, chronic pancreatitis, or the two conditions, chronic pancreatitis and exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, are significantly overlapping, they're not entirely, they're not 100% overlapping. In other words, there is evidence there is a possibility and physiology to be able to develop exocrine pancreatic insufficiency without necessarily developing obvious clinical signs of chronic pancreatitis. And the other way around, there are patients who develop chronic pancreatitis but actually don't lose so much pancreatic function that they develop exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. And I think this explanation sort of kind of points to the fact that neither of these terminologies are kind of a yes or no or a definitive kind of diagnosis. In other words, they represent a spectrum. So there is a spectrum on which exocrine pancreatic insufficiency develops. And on that spectrum, somewhere along the spectrum, we have diagnostic tests that can identify patients with exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. But that doesn't mean that the condition isn't developing prior to the ability to being able to diagnose it. And to some extent, the same is true for chronic pancreatitis. So while the two conditions are overlapping, both their diagnosis, which is sometimes challenging, and we'll talk a little bit about that, both their diagnosis and their manifestations are on a spectrum, and therefore there are a significant number of patients who can have one or the other.
Okay, great. Now we know abdominal pain is a primary symptom for patients with CP and is also a primary focus of management. Can you talk a little bit about what are the common management strategies for pain in CP, and at what point does addressing EPI become an important focus?
Sure. So chronic pain is the dominant condition or the dominant manifestation of chronic pancreatitis, and I think the one that nearly all of our therapies are focused on. And I generally divide sort of the approach to pain management a couple of ways in chronic pancreatitis. One is really focused on the pancreas itself and the pancreatic function, and the other is really focused on sort of the extra pancreatic contributors to pain manifestations. And I know, Dr. Palermo, you will cover a lot of this, so I won't get into some of those details. But I think when we, as a gastroenterologist, often my sort of focus is to really try to help patients with chronic pancreatitis-associated pain, targeting the pancreatic abnormalities. And those abnormalities come kind of in two large categories. One is to target the functional abnormality or the functional loss that is associated with chronic pancreatitis, and that is primarily exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. So when patients develop pain with chronic pancreatitis, one of the reasons that happens is that their digestive function is impaired, and that exacerbates their pain manifestations, and therefore targeting and essentially replacing or overcoming this exocrine pancreatic insufficiency that results from chronic pancreatitis can be a very effective way of treating the pain. The other sort of general broad strategy is to essentially target kind of and this is not the best word to use, but to some extent, structural changes that occur in the pancreas, and essentially try to relieve or improve the ability of pancreatic enzymes to drain from the pancreatic tissue into the intestine. And these approaches typically include either endoscopic approaches to allow better access of pancreatic juice to get to the intestines, or sometimes surgical approaches to either remove a particularly diseased part of the pancreas or to improve the drainage of the pancreatic tissue.
Great, thank you. Can you walk us through a little bit of the diagnostic journey? How do patients usually find out that they have CP or EPI?
Yeah, so I think you know, it's quite diverse, and I think it's it talks to sort of the many faces of pancreatic disease. From you know, sometimes patients are found to have chronic pancreatitis incidentally when they're undergoing for some other type of workup, and it shows that there is such a thing as asymptomatic chronic pancreatitis, and I think that's important to recognize. I would say that the majority of patients with chronic pancreatitis come to attention based on predominantly gastrointestinal symptoms, and the dominant one of these is pain. Pain is a, you know, there is a sort of typical pancreatitis or chronic pancreatitis associated pain, which is often described as a mid-abdominal pain. There's often a component of radiation to the pain, not infrequently to the back of the pancreas. There's often an association of this pain with eating, and typically is worse worsened after a meal. But certainly there is again, there is a very broad spectrum where chronic pancreatitis pain can be much different than that classic description. And so sometimes there the patients have an actually, unfortunately, overly long journey until they're identified to have chronic pancreatitis. Similarly, exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, in its sort of classic or textbook manifestation, is one that you know, is identified because the digestive function diminishes to the extent that patients begin to lose weight, and their ability to digest food changes, and therefore their bowel movements begin to change, and they develop a condition called steatorrhea, which is essentially a fat malabsorption where they notice that their bowel movements contain an excessive amount of fat. And that is the extreme end of the spectrum, but we now know that many patients with exocrine pancreatic insufficiency have much subtler manifestations where again, either abdominal pain or diarrheal symptoms can be the only sign for exocrine pancreatic insufficiency.
Thank you. You talked a little bit about the impact on patients' quality of life from some of the symptoms, but what else I think would be important to know about impact of EPI on eating and nutrition?
So we focused on sort of the association between pain, chronic pancreatitis, and exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. But of course, the absence of digestive function has a tremendous sort of other effect on health, both from the perspective of losing digestive function, so malabsorption and malabsorption of certain vitamins and their downstream effects, or malabsorption of fat and proteins, and sort of their result in malnutrition has significant health effects. And we're starting to understand that exocrine pancreatic insufficiency has a really broad array of effects on quality of life. And finding that actually correcting exocrine, or at least treating exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, significantly improves essentially a much broader spectrum of quality of life indicators beyond pain and malabsorption.
Great. And I think we're going to transition now and talk about the link between EPI, CP, and pain.
So that's my cue to turn the tables around a little bit. So Dr. Palermo, chronic pain is a major aspect of chronic pancreatitis. Can you just walk us through how you approach sort of manifestation of pain and how it impacts patients' lives, and what your sort of general approach is to a patient who presents with pain and chronic pancreatitis?
Sure. Yeah, thank you for the question. As you described, chronic pancreatitis pain is complex because it reflects not only the pancreatic pathology, but also there can be neuropathic changes and central sensitization. So this means that the causes are not only from the pancreas, but also from the nerves and the way the body's pain system becomes more sensitive over time. And that many patients experience abdominal pain related to CP that impacts their life across a broad number of areas, including poor sleep quality, economic burden, workplace challenges, social isolation, as well as what you talked about with malnutrition, weight loss, nutrition issues. So because of the complexity and the broad number of factors that impact CP pain, really a biopsychosocial approach is needed to manage pain related to CP. And so biopsychosocial models really emphasize the physical, psychological, and social factors that can both contribute to the development of pain. So these are often thought of as risk factors, but they can also prolong or maintain pain and disability over time. So we call these like maintaining factors. And we know in CP that there's environmental, lifestyle, and psychosocial factors that all have shown in prospective studies that they contribute to the severity as well as the persistence of pain over time. And these include things like physical activity levels, sleep, especially insomnia symptoms, smoking, alcohol use, mood, as well as pain catastrophizing. And this is a word that you may have heard before. This really refers to thoughts of helplessness and inability to cope with pain, but can be very impactful in how people approach pain management.
So can you talk a little bit about the psychological approaches that you actually find most effective in managing chronic pain in chronic pancreatitis?
Yeah, because of the complexity of chronic pain, psychological approaches have been used in many different chronic pain conditions and have shown effectiveness. There is a broad range of psychological approaches. The most commonly used is cognitive behavioral therapy or CBT, which has been studied the most in clinical trials, both in abdominal pain. We have emerging clinical trials in chronic pancreatitis as well. And this is an approach that teaches patients cognitive and behavioral skills to both minimize the impact of pain on their activity participation, as well as on their psychosocial well-being. And so these are really what you can think of them as kind of coping skills for managing pain. And clinical trials have shown that CBT can be quite effective in both directly reducing pain as well as having impact on quality of life and improving mood. There's other psychological approaches such as acceptance and commitment therapy, mindfulness-based treatments. There's promising studies and patients certainly find value in these approaches. There's just been fewer clinical trials and there's none at present in chronic pancreatitis. But these approaches, just to give you a sense of them, ACT kind of emphasizes helping people learn new ways to live with pain by focusing on what matters most to them. It focuses on bringing activities that bring meaning and joy to patients, even if pain is still present. Mindfulness is, similarly is a different approach, but really is focusing on keeping people focused on the present moment and noticing, comfort, calm, connection, really having the ability to shift from focusing on pain itself.
Can you talk a little bit about, in your practice in treating chronic pancreatitis patients, how these approaches are sort of integrated with medical or other methods of pain management?
Yeah, we know for chronic pain, the best results usually come from combining medical treatment with strategies that can give patients more tools for coping with some of these other areas of how pain is impacting them. So psychological approaches really should be integrated into the care of patients with chronic pain. And, if you can think about this as having more tools for a patient, just like, physical therapy, it doesn't change the actual disease, right? So I'm in PT right now for my hip osteoarthritis. It's not going to change my underlying arthritis. However, PT is going to strengthen my body, help me function better. Similarly, psychological approaches really give people tools where they can sleep better, have more energy, do the things that matter to them, that can, in the long run, improve their quality of life. So it's really putting more tools in the toolbox for patients. And that's why it's really important to think about, for patients who have really persisting pain and a lot of impact in their daily life, how to have them work with psychologists to really be able to build that toolbox.
And then finally, before we sort of move on to the kind of takeaway points, can you talk of just for a minute about the ongoing studies that are that you particularly are involved in or are currently ongoing that focus on pain management or pain treatment in chronic pancreatitis?
Sure. We do have a study right now of cognitive behavioral therapy for pain management, and it's called the IMPACT 2 study. And because it's so challenging to find psychological expertise in many communities in person, we are studying an approach using an internet-based program that patients can use on their own in their home to learn pain coping skills, similar to what I discussed today. And really, we're trying to understand, does this internet-delivered cognitive behavioral therapy program lead to improvements in pain and related outcomes? Does it improve quality of life in comparison to an education, pain education condition? We're at the same time studying how can we implement this in the real world. So part of the study is also looking at interviewing patients, providers, clinic managers, patient-based organizations to really understand, okay, if our clinical trial shows effectiveness, can we put this program out in the real world? What's the best way to support and sustain it over time so that it is accessible to patients and can hopefully make an impact?
Thank you so much for that summary. I think I'm going to turn it back to you for a couple of the key takeaway points and other questions towards the end.
So as a gastroenterologist, when would you suspect EPI in patients with CPN pain?
So I think as we've heard from, I guess, my introduction and also from your summary, you know, this is really quite a broad spectrum. I think we're more and more inclined to think about chronic pancreatitis and EPI in essentially patients who, you know, It's easy to think about it when patients have a history of pancreatic diseases, prior attacks of acute pancreatitis. I think it's our role now is really to identify patients who don't have that obvious or known history and have either characteristic or sometimes atypical pain or digestive manifestations of either of those conditions.
And can you talk a little about the additional role of nutritional support in patient education?
Yeah, so I think that's huge, and I think uniformly we're still struggling with optimizing our care and nutritional support for patients. Obviously, this is as we said, a digestive enzyme, and no other organ functions more centrally around our sort of nutritional intake and is impacted by nutritional challenges. So I find it super helpful in managing patients with exocrine pancreatic insufficiency to have the insight of a nutritionist who really can guide with how, when, and what doses of pancreatic enzyme replacement therapies to take, but also to help us understand, help the patients understand, you know, what are the different components of the diet. There's so much out there on social media and just in the lay literature about nutritional advice. And I think to get sort of a professional advice of somebody who understands how pancreatic nutrition functions and how to incorporate it into treatment is critically important. By sort of the similar token, is that something that you integrate, Dr. Palermo, in your management nutritional, so in sort of a comprehensive pain management program, such components as diet in addition to some of the other behavioral management components?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that, you know, nutritional support can be an important part of self-management of disease and is an important addition. You know, when we think about supporting patients in terms of behavioral support, we really look at the whole picture and think about what are the areas of impact for an individual patient, what kind of support do they need for self-management as well as for pain management specifically. So agree, and I didn't get a chance to talk about sleep, but sleep plays a really important role both in pain as well as in nutrition. It's actually, you know, sleep is one of these broad things that's connected to many other systems and processes, and can be a problem for people with chronic pancreatitis pain. So it's an area that we really can provide some additional support in.
So as sort of a concluding remark, I hope that we conveyed that this is a complex set of sort of two somewhat overlapping diseases, and I think the management of it in a multidisciplinary fashion and sort of the emphasis on recognizing both chronic pancreatitis and exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, particularly sort of the early detection of these conditions, is important and can have a major impact on patients' sort of well-being and treatment. So I would like to thank again the National Pancreas Foundation for this opportunity. And fortunately, we didn't get to a lot of the Q&A, but I'm sure we'll have a mechanism to answer any questions that the audience has submitted.